the Indian Institute of Technology, Kharagpur, and he will be talking about business in Asia. And after that, our own innovation professor Antti Hautamäki will give a short commentary also. But now, thank you, and welcome, Professor Biswas.
Thank you so much. Thanks a lot. Good afternoon to all of you. I was not sure about this open forum format until last evening. When I thought it's a part of the course, I'm teaching the popular course in University School for almost 5 years now. This is the sixth year, actually. And then I realized that it's not part of the course. It's just an open forum. So when I wrote this up, I thought it's part of the course, and now it is not part of the course. So there is some overlap. I hope you will understand that. We have a very intense course for 22 hours in the fall, every fall in Uvascula, Business in Asia. So where I go step by step in the geographical context, cultural context, economy, including GDP and FDI and debts and banking and all sorts of things. Then we go on special topics. Every year, Asia is changing with the world, of course. In the last 6 years, it's very fluid. 2008, Lehman Brothers. After that, the world is every year is different, pretty much. All predictions are not, none of them have been happening to be correct. So every year, I have one chapter, which is, I call it intersections, where transitions are happening. And finally, I have a green sustainability end for this kind of business in Asia. So that is the overall course, but this is a perspective. So I'm going to talk in general about India and China, the comparatives. Of course, Asia is too big a place, so and we are focused only on India and China. And with that, some other neighboring countries and, impact with the European Union and the United States, of course. That's always the point in question. We start off with the so-called BRICS, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and now SA South Africa. They have changed the definition again. The growth rate is, for Brazil and Russia, of course, the growth rate is on the lower side. For India and China, it's on the higher side. Though India is lower by China, usually by 2 points, because of different reasons I will explain. China started this story much earlier. 1980. India started the growth story in 1992. So they're about 10, 12 years behind. 12 years gives you 2%. That's my estimate. So if anybody asks where is India, I say 12 years behind China, pretty much. And I just was listening to a CNN news report, and this guy said the same thing. I was happy that I'm not totally ignorant. I'm not an economist, so I have some ignorance. If you see the growth rate of these two nations that helped to survive the Lehman Brothers destructive situation, when in 2008, the Lehman Brothers and the U.S. system had a big mess because of banking crisis followed by European recession. It is the growth in Asia, primarily China and India, which helped the world to get a still reasonable about 3% growth. Now, those two parts of the world are slowing down. Slowing down for different reasons, totally different reasons. And I'll come to that. And if there is a misadventure after U.S. elections in November, and if there are further deepening problems in Greece and Italy and Spain, then this time there will be more severe effect. But if the U.S. and European Union can handle it well, then the slowdown in India and China can be managed. So it's like paying back time. So it's paying back time to the world economic growth by EU and US, hopefully, in the next 2 years. So that is my perspective of this presentation. this is where the Lehman Brothers thing happened, and the advanced economies, along with the emerging economies, all dipped. And then, of course, recovery was there, followed by a lot of government spending. United States, European Union, China, India all spend a lot of monies to create new infrastructure, and that helped to create jobs and create growth in the GDP. And then there were oil price problems. The OPEC countries, the oil price is not steady. It went up and down, up and down. There was a nice recovery in February of last year, which now is again going down because of the oil prices are still high. And if you extend up to 2012, which data is this IMF data, data is not there, consolidated data, you will see that it's already coming down again. It's not like a big drop like this, but it is like one of these drops. Okay, so it's an oil price related kind of thing. There's some more data for an economist, Economist magazine. And again, it's put to, good to put in perspective. The U.S. growth is around 1.7% versus 2.4 last year. 2.4 will be the projection in 2013 next year. It's growing up. Unemployment is lower now, below 8%, as you know. It's helping the Obama campaign. If you go to the next page, the Europeans, this chart is kind of small, but the European Union growth rate is, Germany is the main growing economy. Supposed to slow down to 1.5. In 2013, there's an upswing from this year, of course. And the other economies are in negatives, like Greece, and this is Slovenia, and there are a lot of countries which are like Portugal. These are problem countries at this moment. Finland is somehow managed out of 0 to 1.8. And then you have the interesting block of the advanced Asia, which grows like the United States. And the new countries of Asia, which are like mostly the Asian tigers, they grow consistently on 4%. And the biggest problem is here, where China, India actually slows down. China slows down 1% point. India slows down, maybe the slowdown is 2% point, because the latest forecast of India is 5.5. This data is already 2 months old. So India is slowing down quite fast. It's 5.5. So I start with a positive outlook. The best period in world history. Is it in front of us? Is it behind us? a crystal gazing. I'll give an engineer's perspective. An entrepreneur always thinks of solving. So I am not a doomsday sayer. So I'm going to talk about positive things. But people who are familiar with the Chinese growth story, China, as you know, is a consumption, is a export-driven economy. And India is an economy that's consumption-driven. China is ruled by one-party rule, Communist Party of China, CPC. India is multi-party rule, fully democratic for the last 70 years. So China and India are very different. I mean, I would say India is more like the United States because it's driven by consumption, not by exports. Okay. So the Indian slowdown is significant. Indian slowdown should not have happened. It is probably because of some policy paralysis. India has a coalition government, as you may well know, which is a minority government like in Israel, which means smaller political parties has a lot of influence on policy, because together they made the government survive. Otherwise, the government will lose no confidence motion in the parliament any time. So this has, unfortunately, the architect of the new India, which is Dr. Manmohan Singh, our Prime Minister, who started as Finance Minister in 91 and actually liberated the Indian economy in 91 and started this whole growth story. India was growing like 3.5 to 4% from 47 till almost 80s. The Soviet-style technique did not work for India, actually. So this same Manmohan Singh, when he's the Prime Minister of India for the last 7 years, almost 8 years now, in this second term, we started like three years back, he is haunted by these smaller political parties, small political parties, which is always creating trouble for him. He cannot make a decision. So New York Times got a scathing attack on him about a month back, saying that he's a wimp, he cannot decide, and that kind, and almost that kind of language. So, and also he has 2.5 years left. So he realized that if he doesn't do something now, his political party, Congress party, will probably go down for good. So he actually fired those smaller parties 2 weeks back. He took some very strong step. He took the risk of the government going under. Okay, he convinced some other parties, replaced their votes, fired those guys who were a problem, the lady, Trinamool Congress leader, Mamata Banerjee, and he started reforms. He opened up the FDI in retail, which is a big discussion, FDI Aviation, FDI in strategic industries, and now he's going to open up insurance reform. He will do pension funds reform. He's going to do many reforms. So he's doing a second set of reforms like he did in 91 again. And he's saying, I want to bring, quote-unquote, animal spirit in Indian economy. Animal spirit. So he's either going to not make it or he will die, whatever the case is. But he's trying. So two weeks in a row, investors are supportive. In just 2 weeks, India got about $1.3 billion of FDI. In one day, got $500 million after even the announcement. The rupee, which was doing very bad, Indian rupee. Rupee is a good currency, very strong usually. It stays 45 for years and years. It went down to 57 to a dollar because of this indecisiveness. Moment he declared the new reforms, it went to 51. Boom. It's 5 rupees, it's changed in one day. It's a free currency and it's going again stronger and stronger. So reform is taking place. Stock market is booming for the last 2 weeks. Hopefully this is not a two-week thing. Hopefully it's not a temporary thing. So I think the Indian growth will come back. Okay, if it does, then we're in the best period. It's ahead of us. China, India will become growth leaders. China has a different problem. China is different because it is driven by exports. And Chinese people, majority people are middle class, and they don't have enough money to buy consumer goods. They're in the villages. They don't travel to cities. So it's very hard to boost Chinese consumption unless you increase minimum wages. Increase minimum wages will have a big effect on exports. But it will help to boost consumption in the economy. And that is what China needs. Because China either has to do that or the US will push them to develop the yuan. Either or will happen. So I think Chinese also will do good job. The new political leadership, because the current president is retiring, Hu Jintao, new leadership is coming in. Zhai and Li, and these two guys, they will improve consumption, they would increase minimum wage, they would make China competitive by trying to make it more free market. So I think together, both the countries, for different reasons of course, will do well. That's my prognosis. There's a gloomy place, there are problems in debt, unemployment, deficit and crisis. cannot see very well the colors. I mean, it would really believe that the planet Earth has never been in worse shape. Sometimes it feels that way. But it's really not. We can always blame others. American messed up, Greeks are lazy, Latins are corrupt, Germans lack statesmanship, bankers are dishonest, financial service industry has only mercenaries, CEOs are thieves. We can keep talking garbage. It won't solve anybody's problem by talking garbage. These are only frustration comments. It doesn't solve. None of these are true. They all have reasons why Greeks are like that, why CEOs are like that, why Americans messed up. Everything can be explained by details. Of course, there's a corruption issue. That is real. That is haunting India, China, and parts of Italy. All right, the most negative factors, government reservations, politicians providing gridlock is true in Italy and is true in India. China, there is no gridlock. There's only one party. And very poor governance around the world. I mean, including the United States, it's unthinkable to think that U.S. General Motors is owned by U.S. government. It's unthinkable to think that Ford is owned by U.S. government. It's unthinkable to think that BlackRock sold Chrysler to Italians, Fiat. Fiat owns Chrysler. These are unthinkable things happen. So not everything Walmart is really rosy. But again, he had no choice. He had to do something to pull out of the problem. So I think we should appreciate that, so criticizing it. And of course, in spite of all this, the GDP internationally grew to $70 trillion within these 3 years, in spite of the Lehman Brothers problem in 2008, with a reasonable growth rate of 4.5%, again, pushed by China and India. And in China, the real capital income really went up to $7,600. And it has removed a lot of people, about 500 million people, who are very poor. Together, India and China removed 50% of people who are very poor in last 50 years. Now, that's not bad. But still the world has about 2 billion very poor people, out of which 1 billion is in Asia, in India and China. So the story is not done. Those two countries must grow at 10% every year for 10 more years to eradicate poverty. Anything less than 10% will not make it, because the number of poor are just huge number. Okay. If you look at other parameters which denote good quality, infant mortality went down, life expectancy went up substantially by about more than 10% in 30 years in those countries. Malnutrition remains to be a problem, lack of drinking water. I have responded to many questions here, and I said that one of the things which Finnish or European business can do is to provide drinking water solutions as a business model. And that will be, you know, it's actually a pity that India is a rain-fed country and gets one of the world's highest rain, yet it cannot collect the water and has no water to feed its people. So actually it's not an acceptable situation. It can be solved by engineering and science quite easily. And I think Finland has solutions. Basic education. There are guys here in Jyväskylä working on this in Africa through games. I would appeal to them, they should do something with us. And basic healthcare, I am trying to do a small contribution with my Finnish friends. We have Mauricio Ranta here. We haven't succeeded, but we are trying. So that is another thing which needs to be done. So while we feel frustrated at the slow pace of action, we can compare it with past periods of history, and it is improving. Problems, as I said, I just said these problems. The consumers are waking up. India and China will spend $10 trillion on goods and services by year 2020. And that's why, in spite of how much you hate the Walmarts of the world, you need to bring them in, because that will bring in best practices, supply chain. It will cause some destruction of small stores. It is not always that rosy. But overall, it will be good for developing Asia. And middle class is the main driver. As you know, there's a book called The 10 Trillion Prize, Captivating the Newly Affluent in China and India. It just got published. It's a very nice book talking about this kind of things. Middle class in both countries will be 1 billion by 2020. Today it is something like maybe 600 million people, 650 together. India is like 240, China is like maybe 350. And this is a huge population which has more disposable income than the United States. Okay, so that is going to drive the growth. So I'm bullish that this is going to happen. And I see significant amount of Indian businessmen already moved to Africa. Okay, and Chinese too. So that's coming up next. Boomerang effect. There will be consequences of this rising demand on other activities like housing, luxury goods, transport, education, price volatility, inflation, of course, and the triple crown, which an issue here where the businesses that needs to be globalized, they do face challenges in China and India, and that's an issue. I'll take one moment here out of your time to put some spice in discussion. You know, we have the Arab Spring, you know that which had started sweeping from Algeria to Libya to Egypt and then got stuck in Syria, something like that. And it did not achieve much except the euphoria and then back to totalitarian regimes, both in Libya and Egypt. I think this Arab Spring is fueled by price of food. And I think the price of food is high because 2006, 2005, the U.S. Enacted laws to put ethanol into the fuel, as a biofuel, into the petrol, and that pushed the corn growers in Midwest, in Iowa and all these places, to use, for the first time, link fuel and food. And there are food crises. If you look at Chicago Board of Trade, the futures market, and the food market really spiked up after this corn being used for ethanol. And it hasn't stopped since then. So all of these issues, I think the Arab Spring is not really an American creation. It is a creation of us because we wanted to have cheaper solution for the fuel crisis, which we did not. So how do we do from here? Where is the next 1 billion? I mean, we are going to get, instead of trying to focusing on the first 1 billion who are middle class, let's focus on businesses for the next 1 billion, which we don't think about. And that also has a lot of businesses to do. That those poor people who earn less than $2 a day, they also need chairs, tables, housing, education, toothbrush, toothpaste, everything like we do. And there is a business out there. It's not that it's a poor man's business. We have to just use new models, which we discussed with Professor Anti last time. Maybe Agora Center, us, Berkeley, we should work together to create that model. It's not easy. It's a hippie thing. It is not a very glamorous thing to design chairs and tables to sell at low price. But it probably can be done. So the accelerator mindset needs to be brought in. We need to accelerate by fast-growing ventures, which is one of the reasons I keep coming to Finland. I was motivated by the venture acceleration process I've seen here in the past. And the way forward, these economies needs to work together. If you are not aware of, China is already India's biggest trading partner. And Chinese sell to India everything from power plants to like pens, pencils, whatever. So India cannot afford to be like United States. India has all these people to get jobs. So India got smarter and gone to automotive, and now is automotive half of the world. It's creating lots of automobiles, and India is going manufacturing. It's skilled manufacturing age. You know, like if for economic development, you have three ages. One is pre-industrial, industrial, and service. So India jumped the pre-industrial to industrial. It did very fast because of Soviet confusion, and jumped to service because Y2K problem was there. So Microsoft messed up the codes, and India found a niche for software industry. If there was no Y2K, I think India wouldn't develop software like this today. This is just a coincidence. We owe it to Bill Gates, really, for us to get into software. So I think India is now seeing the problems of software to deliver inclusive growth, so it's going back to automotives, housing, roads again. So it's going towards traditional businesses. With that, this comparative chart I talked about already, so I'm not going to spend too much time on it. There are some figures which I thought this India today just came out this week. I was reading in the plane. I thought I just scanned them in. And look at this comparative. China invests more than half of GDP, while India invests a significantly small amount, like one third. China exports almost 2 trillion, India exports only 0.3 trillion. Okay, because India is driven by consumption, not by exports. China has 3.2 trillion treasury bills. India has 300 billion, 0.3, one-tenth. Okay. China is going back on surplus. The boom is actually over. China is importing more than exporting. It's importing wrong things. Is importing pre-finished goods, knockdown kits, so-called re-exportable items. Is importing coal. Is importing fuel. Is not importing right things which West can sell. Is importing things from Australia, from Africa. So it is not solving the imbalance. It's actually adding to more imbalance. People call the word like they want to retune China, rebalancing. This will not do rebalancing. This will do more and more underbalancing. Okay, that is a joke that President Obama and Mr. Romney was having this debate. And Romney declared that the first day he becomes president, he will declare China's currency illegal, which means he's going to make sure that the currency is devalued immediately. So China was praying to God that let Obama win, then there is no problem, something like that. The size does matter. China, without purchasing parity terms, is the world's second biggest economy. After, you know, like they crossed Japan last year and moved very fast since then. India is fifth biggest. India is supposed to cross Japan in about 15 more years or 20 more years. It'll take time. Okay. And if you do the reality check, you know, like the incomes, Luxembourg is like richest country, US 48,000. I don't know where Finland is, somewhere here maybe. You have China, 5,000, for India only 1,400. This is real dollar, not purchasing parity. So purchasing parity will be much higher. So, but in any country that crosses $1,000, goes very fast usually. 1,000 is a kind of threshold where countries struggle for decades. So, you know, China also crossed $1,000 maybe about four and a half years back and moved very fast since then. So I think they'll catch up, but no way like that. All right. The alchemy of China's growth, as I said repeatedly, is driven a lot of by investment and consumption, less investment, more. It's going to change. Exports are decreasing. You have seen the current account surplus is decreasing. The consumption, you see, China is going down, which needs to go up. And investment, China is still going up because government invests. And there are a lot of cash, all this $3 trillion we talked about. Yes.
Capacity of China.
Yes, that's a good question. I don't have the data right now here, but I did comment in my class that China and Taiwan both has less patents than Korea. Yeah. So that says that the capital is really poor right now. So innovation, and this is something which I don't want to comment on because it's kind of racist to comment like this. I don't want to do such nonsense. But you guys travel a lot, like I also travel. I have seen that this grouping mentality Japanese have, like designing groups, doesn't help innovation. That's my reason. I think China has same syndrome.
I remember these tigers of Asia, you mean Malaysia, so they growth very quickly in the 90s.
Yes.
And Paul Krugman analyzed that miracle and said, it's very easy to explain so much foreign investments, just to infrastructure and so on. So
yes.
Of course, we can see growth if it's a very brutal amount of money is growth. But what about internal structure of skillness and
yes.
That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, both countries, they have good schools, high schools, but both focus on rote memory, cramming the kids. Because if you don't cram, you don't get good grades, you don't get a good future. Because limited opportunities. So that is a problem. So both of the countries, I mean, India has very good IPR environment compared to China. China also has a problem of copying, the copying issue, though it is not really that much true. There's a lot of misinformation at the same time, but it's also somewhat real, not completely wrong. And that is improving. China, the IPR respect of others' IPR is improving, but not there yet. And so that also will improve innovation system in the country. So here, if you look at GDP by sector, something is missing. You know, India had these, India did not have much industry, so now theirs has to be widened up at the expense of service. So India and China needs to increase industry, most of all India, and China service at the cost of each other. Agriculture also has to grow. Both the countries did not do high-tech agriculture yet. Both of them they did a good job in 50s, 60s, and then stopped. So a lot more has to be done. I skipped this. I talked about this already because it's lack of time. I would make one comment that India has a strong external FDI. So India gets almost as much money in as much money out for last few years, which means the Indian companies are like investing heavily outside. They have become multinationals. Okay. Like Tatas, I mean, who knows here that the Tatas own Land Rover Jaguar? Few people know that. And Jaguar is an Indian company, no more British company. Okay, it's a complete turnaround with the British, 250 years it took. So, now that is Tata style. They don't touch the management. They keep it British. Okay, the style of all Indian companies. Mittal Arcelor, Mittal doesn't change Arcelor. They keep it Belgium and French and Dutch. They don't change it. Reliance took over Dow Chemicals. Dow is an Indian company. Who knows? Few people know that. But Reliance bought Dow. Okay. Now, so this is the Indian style of multinationals. They don't publicize it. They don't change the management. They slowly, slowly try to increase the growth process. Tata bought Coral. You know that. So these are kind of acquisitions which I think kind of trend pointers that the Indian story is still not there. It's coming. It's going to get better and better. Now, which one is the best bet? Surely it's China, if you look at statistics of today. Okay, export of goods, it takes less time for China than India. Fire a worker, China is poorer, communist country. India can fire a little bit faster, but not quite. Still several days. You need 80 days to fire somebody. That's pretty long. The US are going to do in 8 seconds. register a property, you know, China takes less time. India is very bureaucratic. I tell my friends that, you know, India got bureaucracy from the British and fully perfected it. You know, the perfection of bureaucracy. No other country has done that well. How to stop a process, how to kill something, how to not do something, India is very good at. Indian government people, they're very bureaucratic. Okay, comply with licenses, China, India are comparable, but as you say, overall China scores better in this one right now, but not quite. I'm going to skip this because there's time. Excuse me for skipping things. I did not realize the time. I'll come to this. Before that, if I may just say one thing about China, that in spite of many positives of China, the fact that do you need a democracy, is that help the private market? I don't know. I mean, China can decide very quickly. So do you need freedom of Facebook, Google, YouTube, or do you need fast movement of goods and services? Now, these are, I believe we need freedom. Forget about goods and services. I believe that there's nothing is negotiable for human freedom. So I think, give it some time, India's freedom, democracy, will be clearly evident. Right now, because of still economy is not strong yet, you don't see it, but India has a very high savings rate, 30%, highest in the world. India has demographic dividend. Demographically, in about 3-4 years, China will cross the peak. So number of people who are available to work will reduce in China because of the aging population. But China enforced one child, one family rule. India cannot do those things. India is a democratic country. So India's population is very young, and the peak will come 15 years later, about 2035, okay, or 2030, something like that. So the best is yet to come in India. If they can do the reforms, they can manage corruption and not get blow up by that, the government I'm talking, and can reasonably work on the weaknesses of infrastructure, which is a problem, human indicators, shortage of skilled manpower. India graduates 600,000 undergraduate every year, but they're not skilled enough. So all these big companies like Wipro, Infosys, and all this, like Tata's, they retrain those employees in big universities, private schools they have created, like Tata University, Wipro University, where students again are trained for 1 year until they're in the workforce. So India has a problem of skilled manpower. Opportunities, of course, as I said, India as a youth is very strong in India. Knowledge-based growth, very strong knowledge-based growth. And India is more world-integrated and urbanized. Of course, there are threats of uncertain deficit. The fiscal deficit is strong, it's more than 5-6%. Moody's always threatening to downgrade the bonds from buy to not buy. The climate change issues, but I guess China is worse in this. Regional inequalities, that is worse than China because being a non-communist country, you don't solve these problems overnight. You need to grow economically. This is one of the pictures which I thought I should show it for this presentation. This shows the mega cities and the population centers and the GDP growth in them. So you see these darker colors are the ones with more GDP growth. The lighter color is less GDP growth. But the place with a lighter color like this and this and this, they're also rich. So the growth is not always related to the per capita income. GDP per person is high here, is high here, is high here, is high here, not throughout the country. This GDP shows $2,000. So some places like Punjab is almost $3,000, as high as China. So like Kolkata is almost $2,500. Some place are less. Like Delhi is almost $4,000 per capita income. So some parts are very, very good. So it will make it. Okay, and some parts are poor, like $1,000 here in one part of Tamil Nadu. One important issue for China has an immense territorial dispute, which I don't know who will solve and when. And China has dispute with everybody. dispute with Japan on Socotra Island, Senkaku, and this happened last 2 weeks, as you know, it flared up. It has dispute with Vietnam or Paracel Island, dispute with Spratly's Islands, with Vietnam, Malaysia, Cambodia, dispute with India over they want this part of India also. Tibet is hardly Chinese, it should be a free country. They've taken over this part of Kashmir, that's Indian territory. Pakistan took this part from India and leased to China. So nice. So India is left with this Kashmir. That's the real Kashmir, which was there in 47 when India became free. So China has immense territorial disputes. And that's going to always be used to gain scores economically. For example, even though China has taken Tibet, and India is home to Dalai Lama, as you know, India is home to more than 1 million Tibetan refugees, right? They stay somewhere here. Like, though China took over Tibet, India, by force, had to accept it. Even though China doesn't accept Kashmir, India accepted Tibet. No choice, because China has more power, muscle power. So India keep quiet. It cannot afford a fight. And it's very hard to fight on this area. These are all Himalayas, very high mountains. Fighting is very expensive. It's like fighting in Switzerland. You cannot do much. I mean, you cannot put your armor, tanks. So fighting in this zone is very expensive. I was reading a statistics once that fighting per person, the cost to fight Himalaya is like 7-8 times than fighting in the desert. 7-8 times. So you need to, you cannot do that. So this is the one issue that these island chains, even these are claimed by Chinese near Guam, Okinotori Islands. So China has huge claim of the islands. Okay, now this is a picture of Gurgaon, New Delhi. You know, it's a lot of flashy buildings. Now, does this work? Will the elevator work? Will the water come out from the faucet? Will the power go on? I don't know. Second picture, the trains in Mumbai, right? Very crowded, right? Very, very crowded. Right? I mean, people do this every day. They go like bats. You have seen bats. They hang from the trees. So people hang like this, you know. People are very happy in parts of India and China. Happiness has nothing to do with prosperity. People are very happy. They have no complaints. They're happy to live like this. They will admire the West, but they will not go and shoot it down like Bin Laden did. They're very happy with themselves and with others. And that's not good sometimes with capitalism. If you're always very happy, you don't work hard. So you have to somehow find a balance. I'm joking, but happiness is important. And then this is China. This is Shanghai. I mean, well done, you know, not comparable to this, not comparable, okay? So where does it end? To end something, Albert Einstein said, one cannot alter condition with the same mindset they get in the first place. Now, if you don't believe like Albert Einstein, then you cannot change anything. Okay, so we start with this famous comment of the boss. And then I present to you the concept of jugar. Jugar is a Hindi word. This ja-u-ga-ra, jugar. There's ja like J, ga like G-A, and R. There's R in Sanskrit. So it's jugar. So jugar means clever resourcefulness, if you look at dictionary. Okay, that means nothing. You know, I mean, that's an English translation. A jugar means that... Auntie tells me that there is no chart flipper, and I need a chart flipper. So if I have a phone which would work a chart flipper, I somehow connect it and make it a chart flipper. Or I, you know, somehow make things work out of nothing. It's called bootstrapping. So if I had a choice, I would call it bootstrapping. Jugaad is bootstrapping. The whole Indian and Chinese economy runs on bootstrapping. Very different from the US or European economies. And that is something we should learn. And I will spend 5 minutes of your time to go over this, that how can patients come to doctors? This is what we are trying to do in our health technologies, right? How to manage health without having the doctor being attending you. That's jugar. That's bootstrapping. You know, jugar innovator doctor. This guy is doing jugar like, you know, I don't know how many of you are familiar with India's space program. India's space program used 1/140th of NASA's money to come to current levels. India has a strong space program. It doesn't export wrong technology to North Korea or Pakistan or anybody else, Iran. It is indigenous. It shoots up satellites for France, for Russia, for developed world as well at a very low cost, and is done on Jugaad. It's a bootstrapped satellite program. You have to really come and see this guy, Dr. Mohan, who is behind some of this work. And there are more. I mean, how people try to sell vending refrigerator on a bicycle. There are Jugaad. This is our IIT alumni, Harish Hande, is 3 years junior to me. He has done a company called Selco Solar, where he is promoting photoelectric and photovoltaic solar using microfinance. So microfinance, not to finance a new business, but to finance energy needs. So instead of buying a solar, like photovoltaics for, say, 300 euros, you pay 1 euro every day. And they pay over one year. I'm just making some numbers, something like that. So it's like Grameen Bank for solar. So the key is scalability. He has already reached more than 100,000 homes in rural India and got the Magsaysay Award. Jugaad innovators don't plan, they improvise. Tata Nano Car, Ratan Tata, the chairman of Tata. The Nano Car is a Jugaad. How can you make a car in $2,000? It has been made, it runs, it sells, it conforms European safety four standards, Euro 4 standards. India follows European standards for automotive safety. So it runs, it works, it's very, very different from other cars. It uses a lot of new technology. This car has about 40 odd patents. So when the car was launched about 3 years back in New Delhi Auto Show, they did not use some Bollywood star. They actually used the engineers and the designers who made the patents. Okay. So this is the case of Jugaad. And the list goes on and on. I'm going to not get too far. I think the whole Chinese, the Haier, is also a case of Jugaad. The way Haier came into business, it started making refrigerators, air conditioners, white goods, and then globalized itself, is a case of Jugaad. This is a very non-Western way to scale up. And we in the West need to understand that and make it even better. It goes through this HP slide, agility. And agile development, this is kind of related to this, so I thought I put this slide here, is linked with agile delivery, content delivery, and business agility. So this is it's a very hard task ahead of the HP CEO to fix HP's problem, but HP needs some sort of agile system, which is kind of Jugaad, bootstrapping, to get out of the problems. Let me skip some. McKinsey has the same story called 7S model, which is Jugaad. I'm trying to put things which I think is still bootstrapping, but they have nice fancy names. Okay, McKinsey, of course, is 7S. Style, staff, system, strategy, structure, skills to foster shared values. And this is a higher trajectory. It's well studied, the higher's case, how they import technology in the beginning, and now they're really exporting, now they're really on the high trajectory. They change S-curves from this S-curve to that S-curve. What makes firms so inflexible? Look at the case of Nokia. Nokia is so inflexible in Finland, but so flexible in India. As if they're two different companies. Nokia Finland is flexible. It made innovations. It transformed Nokia into an Indian company almost. Most Indians who are illiterate or not literate very much, they think Nokia is an Indian company. The ads are all Indian. The local CEO is Indian. Nothing Finnish. Okay, they succeeded. They put a flashlight in the phone for poor people because they don't have always electricity, so they might end up in darkness when they go to their house. So they kept adding things which are very different from the Nokias here, where they don't listen to the Android, they don't listen to the problem in their Symbian, they jump and go to Windows. Hopefully that will work. I support that move, by the way, technically. So, this is a more inflexible way which can give to complacency, and that's what happened to Nokia. So we have to improvise. We have to break rules, shift values, change organizational structures, change the silos to gain speed. Woodrow Wilson said the highest and best form of efficiency is the spontaneous cooperation of free people. The Jugaad economy, I don't want to spend too much time of yours because time is running out. I am kind of captivated with the whole thing. I call it a frugal house builder, inclusive doctor, resilient doctor, passionate educator. It is Jugaad to transform the cell phone into a school, not a teacher. Transform the cell phone into a hospital, not a doctor. So these are like convergence that are going to come in our lifetime. Maybe it'll take 10, 15, 20 more years. And I'll skip. Financing can be done, not an issue. You know, Ashoka has some good models. I'm sorry I'm skipping because of the lack of time. How Indian, I mean, I call it groundswell. It's like a groundswell, you know. This Jugaad movement, this movement of bootstrapping, is a groundswell. It's going to really, really swipe away all the other problems. These are great visionaries. You have Steve Jobs, you have Ratan Tata, you have Selco Solar's guy, Hari Shande. These are visionaries who are Jugaad innovators in a way. How did this guy do the Apple innovation? It's Jugaad. You know, he just go in a garage, bootstrap the whole Apple computer, and then kicked out, came back again put together. I mean, this guy doesn't need anybody else. He's just bootstrapping all the time. My health model is something of a Jugaad. For guys who haven't seen it, I will quickly go over it. It addresses availability, affordability, and accessibility and quality. It went through many incarnations. Basically, it went through the kiosk, different types of kiosks for metro and rural, then went to the retail innovation, which I'm working on for last about a year now. We are putting together a newer system, we call second generation. We have a new hardware, a new software. We have moved from Android to Windows. So I'm ready for Nokia. Network model of kiosks. These are some of those diagrams. This is the phase one we had done in the eastern part of India here. And these are the research areas we are focusing in the School of Entrepreneurship towards scalable ventures, inclusive scalable ventures, organizational behavior, product development, technology management, business architecture, social media, quality of service, all for towards the health. We are very focused. I have right now about 10 students doing PhD in these areas of management research. This is my new lab, which Marie hasn't seen, which is my health lab. So I put together many equipments. You're seeing ECG, blood pressure, all together and trying to compare things and study their effect. This is a global venture lab we have started before, which is now reforming itself. And we have a new project now. We have new tools and a new cloud infrastructure, whole new players, milestones. We're going to do this. We're going to scale up to 20 stations around IIT. Okay, that's the new plan. And this will be done with new equipments, no more Android, a Windows-based system, a handheld. And it will hopefully much, much less expensive. I found out through bootstrapping that Android looks very attractive, is simpler, but the apps are expensive to write. The apps are not standard. The Windows looks expensive, but easier to integrate to. So I learned. I learned by not doing it right the first time. So I moved from Android to Windows. What a transformation, because of the cost. Finally, I have created in IIT Kharagpur, with the help of my Finnish friends here, a kind of platform. We want to create research platforms, which will bring together a lot of different professionals, from ICT, from health, from product design, education, energy. So this is not really solving the health problem, it's creating ecosystem which brings people together and they will think differently, okay? And they will create more bootstrapping. I will end this presentation with two of the anecdotes. There's a land problem, as you know, in India going on. The land issue is very strong. We have limited land. India is a land critical country. Means you have less land than you have other parts of the world per human being. So you cannot just arbitrarily move land into industry. So there was a big problem with the Tata Nano, as you know. and the Tata Nano was kicked out. The new law was erected. A lot of things happened. I mean, a huge mess what happened. The Nano was moved out. India has new land reform laws, Supreme Court called illegal. Tata is fighting the government still. And guess what? Tata was kicked out from West Bengal to Gujarat in West India. And Gujarat, which is near Bombay, never had automotive industry. And because of the kicked out Nano went to Gujarat from West Bengal, Gujarat has now the whole hub of automotive industry in just 4 years. So this is how you can always debate, I can grow three crops, I can grow potatoes, or should I grow cars? Now what do you choose depends on your priorities. You cannot have only one outlook. So this is the whole dispute in picture. Climax, people were like killed, many things happened. And unfortunately, still hang up in court. Nothing got solved. The whole factory is mothballed. A factory of about $1 billion is frozen in time. It only happened in India, such things, because of extreme democracy. People stopped it. Okay. FDI, I will not talk about it. India is having FDI issues, as you know. The government policy is flexible. It has reformed multi-brand aviation and broadcasting sector. So anybody can go in and get into sectors in India now. Foreign investment. Pension funds has been also liberated, foreign pension funds. India retailing is going to happen very soon, maybe in a couple of weeks. You see Walmart there. Is it good or bad? I don't know. But one thing I know, that look at this FDI in India. It really increased from after Lehman Brothers. China actually got less, India got more. Then it went down because of so-called policy paralysis by the government. And hopefully this will go up again. So India needs this investment. This is about $33 billion last year. So you need this money to get the growth rate up. I stop there. I mean, I can talk more and more, but I think I should make a stop here. Hopefully it's not confusing to you. There are too many things to say, but the format was unknown to me, so I apologize for rushing you. But maybe next time we'll do better. Thank you. Yes.
It appears that the rules seem to be changing. Like I remember reading recently in some magazine that IKEA, for instance, are having some slight problems with the local government. What's the latest on that? What direction are the rules of FDI changing?
Right. So you know, like India wanted to approve what they call single brand retail, which means only IKEA, not IKEA and Costco together. Okay, that India has approved 2 weeks back. That's why the economy is going upswing. But IKEA was given restriction. They were told, because India is still not sure how this FDI in retail would change the Indian companies. So what they stipulated that 30% of the outsourcing of IKEA needs to be done from within India. And from small startups, small companies, not startups, small companies, not big companies. Because India is 85% people work in small companies. India is more like US or more like Finland, not big company kind of country. Small companies, okay? So, and that IKEA resented that. IKEA said, how can I buy 30% from small companies? Maybe I can buy from big companies like Tata Reliance. And government did not agree. So IKEA in the end, there was some concession that if the product is not available today from small companies, they can have big companies. So with that, IKEA is coming in. So you will see IKEA very soon. Any other questions? Yes, please.
You think about the business environment in China, India. I mean, how government is treating foreign companies and how easy it's operated, and what is, let's say, final intention of governments in China seems that India, China like replace foreign companies by their own. So they are just interesting to learn and imitate and then go up, please go up. So that's one problem, that how seriously government is supporting foreign companies, and is it so that India, they like to have foreign companies working. And another issue is that how is government dealing when companies are exporting their profits back to their home country. We don't know yet what is the reaction in China. Perhaps it's not so easy to get out, because it's, if you invest back, it's okay, but when you are in a position that you have a lot of profits and you like to, you know, export them to your home country. So,
yes.
So in this kind of business environment, issues are important for foreign companies.
I will comment on both.
Yeah.
The first one, whether these companies, the government is helping them to come or not, or if they come, will they be kicked out later? That's the first question.
Yeah.
India is a melting pot for over 5,000 years. Everybody went to India, never came back. British, French, Portuguese stayed for hundreds of years. India is home to almost 70 Fortune 500 companies, global R&D center in Bangalore. Because India has high respect for IPR. Patents, and there's no violation to date, major violation. There are always some small things here and there. So India needs foreign companies, their IPs, to be protected in Bangalore and Mumbai and Delhi and Kolkata to move forward. The government in India doesn't have monies to dump like China does. You have seen China has $3 trillion, India has $300 billion, not comparable amount of money. So government of India will not subsidize any product and sell it in another country called dumping. So you don't have a risk of that, okay? India, I would say, more apathetic. It will not come in and destroy a foreign company, nor will help. That is the Indian style. Okay? It will give a level playground. Even when the wars happened, very wars happened, when Union Carbide had the gas problem, they had a gas leak, right, in their methyl isocyanide, MIC, in their Union Carbide Eveready battery. In Bhopal, it's a very famous gas leak case, industrial safety case. India government allowed Anderson to leave the country. China would have hanged him overnight. So India has a consistent history of not taking away. India attacked East Pakistan, made it free, made Bangladesh and left. India has no history of aggression in the past, as a nation or as a country. I don't think India will be changing laws to stop this guy, because also, because it's a free litigation. The British system is there, English law system. So you can litigate. And in China, like Professor is saying, you have to do joint venture with the Chinese government. How can you sue the government? You cannot sue the state when state is part of your partnership. Okay, so this issue in India is better than China. But China is fast. China may kick you later, but now they will walk very fast for you. So that is the Indian problem. India has bureaucracy, China doesn't. Comparatively, okay? So I think whatever you lose because of uncertainty, you gain from the speed, somewhat. Okay, that's one. And your number two question was, the second question. What was the number?
It was profit.
Yes, the profit. The profit repatriation of profits
is
fully allowed. Rupee is a free currency. It's a free currency. It's not controlled by the government. It went up and down because of economic problem of India, not because government changed it. So repatriation is fully possible. And by the way, India allows 100% of foreign ownership, even in defense, even in biotech. Some sectors are eliminated, 100%. Like aviation, 49%, but still more than 26%. So for all reasons clear, you have no problem of foreign repatriation. If there is an issue, there is one bad example of Vodafone back taxes. It's a very famous case. Vodafone acquired Hutchinson Whampoa of Hong Kong in India, the phone service. And the deal was something like $7 billion, a huge deal. And there was a tax implication of $1.3 billion, which India slapped on Vodafone later, retroactively. And Vodafone went to Supreme Court and won the case. That's proof of India's openness. India government lost to Vodafone 3 months back. So it sued Vodafone for not paying taxes. And Vodafone appealed to the Supreme Court, and the judge threw out the case. So you have fairness. Even the terrorist who had gunned down the Taj Hotel in Bombay in 20th November, This guy, you know, killed 26 people, 30 people. The guys, Al-Qaeda terrorists, and these are like Pakistani origin. They could only catch one of them, Azmal. And in U.S., when they catch the terrorists from Iraq, they move them to Cuba, Guantanamo Bay, because they can avoid U.S. laws. That's not U.S., so they can do some more nonsense to them. Okay, in India, this guy, Azmal, is still alive today. 3 years have passed. He has appealed to Supreme Court, High Court. India is spending $1 million per week for his security because everybody wants to kill him, his so-called friends. So I think the rule of law anti is very strong, both for Vodafone, both for terrorists like Azmal. I think that will prevail. There's always, democracy has those advantages. Because it's not one person who is making the laws. It's a political system. So that probably has some, it evens out. Even if this current government cannot stay in power after next elections, after 2.5 years, the new government has to respect the previous one. So I'm happy that Vodafone was not taxed retroactively. It gave the confidence to the investors. Then Telenor has a similar problem. Telenor invested into India called Uninor, and the company's license was cancelled because they found corruption in not just Telenor, but many other licenses. It's called the 2G scam, very famous corruption case in India. It's about corruption of almost $1 trillion. So they canceled like almost 16 licenses, including Telenor's. Telenor is very upset, okay? So that, you know, they spend money, they spend about $1 billion to get into India and all this thing. So that case is not resolved yet. Government hasn't resolved the case yet. I'm waiting to see what happens. I think they have canceled it because it's part of the same scam. It's not that Telenor did the scam. That is part of the same tendering process, which is polluted or corrupt. So I think overall, you will can repatriate profits. You don't have any issues. The legal system is strong but slow. Not enough judges. Need more fast-track courts. So that is what they have to do. Any other questions? Anybody? Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Drops. Your presentation was really interesting indeed, and your view about the global economy was basically positive, so that we can solve these problems related to poverty and food problems and water problems and so on. I'm happy that, of course, we see some backlash in the U.S. and Europe, but still I'm also very positive. And it was interesting to heard your analysis of India case as compared to China. Of course, there might be different stories if some Chinese would be here and tell how wonderful business environment that they are providing, but I strongly believe that there are some benefits in India. Democracy, education, structure of population, very young people, and of course, and China is becoming green or gray very soon, so that there will be problems also in very very huge problem in China, but still okay. I really hope that Asia will solve the internal problems. I mean that we need peaceful Asia. And I'm a little bit worrying about that. That military powers in China is huge. And also India has atomic bombs and so nuclear weapons. So it's very important that Asia will develop in peaceful way in collaboration. But let me say something very shortly about international collaboration, and I'm repeating somehow, of course, my earlier thought here. But my starting point is that for Finland to collaborate or make business with Asia is not so easy thing. It's not based only, or it's not wise strategy that just do things here and export them to India. That's not good business idea, because our expensive work expenses and travel expenses are huge. So we have to adopt another kind of strategy for operate with Asia, and I think it must be something like co-creation model or collaboration, international collaboration, and so resources has global, so meanings that we have to use resources in India and China and Taiwan, and on the other hand, we also hope that we have something to offer to global value chains. And of course, what we could offer must be based on knowledge, innovation, research. So try to find very good position in global value chains and find best way to collaborate. And at the same time, we have to understand this clustering of resources in the world. You know, this kind of pictures, citations, of course, India, China is growing, of course, U.S., California is here, and Boston, Harvard, New York, here is Europe, Great Britain, and so on. But if you think patents, so there is Japan, I think this is Taiwan. And these kind of spikes will be higher and higher in India. But this is the situation about 5 years ago. So world is spiky. And there is no spike here in Helsinki or Jyväskylä, but still we are collaborating, and we have to find good way to work with real hubs, important hubs in the global economy. So I like to present this picture very often, because still I think that we are very local. We are thinking our own ecosystem, whether in metropolitan region in Helsinki or small one. But the point is that we have to see that there are many, many interesting hubs in the world. And we have to collaborate. We have to find partners. We have to be present in other ecosystems and other hubs. And of course, India is interesting. How to reach good contact to Indian hubs, let's say Kharagpur and so on? What is special there? In what area they are good, and where we are good, and so how to find this complementary skills and combine them in collaboration. So there are many ways to transform knowledge or create together. Brain circulation is very important. Just to visit, like troops is here. We hope that we can visit in Kharagpur, we have been in Singapore, we have been in Silicon Valley and so on, to learn what is happening there, to be present in interesting global hubs. And knowledge transfer or let's say technological transfer is more about learning to do something together and learning new things when you are collaborating and working together. So one way is that how to be present in global hubs. And when I have analyzed the logic of presence in let's say in Silicon Valley or in Delhi, we have to be there. We have need people working there, living there. So we have to build a small diaspora. In Silicon Valley, I know that Indian diaspora is very strong. Chinese diaspora is, even Russian former own network. And I hope, I see that India diaspora in Silicon Valley help very much people coming from India to Silicon Valley. So they have already very good connections. So and also companies are thinking this way. Nokia built a research center in Palo Alto to be there, to build their own diaspora there. And what are connections to local economy? One is alliances to have partners. One is professional communities to be participate to some guilds or clubs or so on. It's very important to find contact to real professionals, whether in business or research or technology and so on, and form some local guilds. And then just to be there in local communities to know what is happening and what is living style and what are important people and so on. To be familiar life there. So without such kind of diaspora thinking, I think our country is cannot benefit enough from foreign global hubs. And of course, we need a lot of resources for this to build a diaspora. So we need tens of people or hundreds of people. And therefore, we have to make a choice, of course. And I have called, I have discussed with the foreign ministry that to build a diaspora, real diaspora, is a real challenge for foreign ministry, because traditional foreign policy is more related to high-level discussion with governments. But to benefit from global networks means that you are not only discussing with governments, but also with companies or universities to help Finnish people to find Finns to find professional communities and learn what is happening there. And I think that Nokia's success in India is based partly this diaspora model and then that they hired Indian people for their research center. One of my relatives was building a design center for Nokia some years ago, and he said that they hired almost all personnel from India, because Finnish engineers and research, of course, they are not so familiar with everyday life. They don't know habits or important as colors and how to use computers and mobile phones and so on. So this is one that how to build somehow stands in foreign countries. Droops referred to new kind of innovation. So I have analyzed also this situation and see that traditionally, innovation was mainly related to economic growth and economic values. Not so bad, of course, not so bad as such. But somehow this view was too narrow. Droops gave a wonderful example of U-Guard thinking, and they was not based on exactly narrow-minded economic values, but more about well-being of people and solving wicked problems and what was important for these companies, I understood, was social values and understand diversity there. So perhaps formula is not innovation, productivity, growth, very good, but more innovating, renewing society, renewing action models and well-being of people. So I call them sustainable innovation. When we visited with Kaisa Oksanen in Singapore, and it was very interesting that in National University of Singapore, professors and our contact person sense, we are thinking India we like to provide India sustainable innovation or they called reverse innovation, to develop reverse innovation and use new kind of engineering, they call frugal engineering. And so if you like to solve this kind of things, so effective solar energy system, poor water cleaning system, and so on and so on, we really need new kind of concept of innovation. And this reverse innovation is interesting concept. If I understand that right, it means that when we make innovation for very special market, let's say in developing country, in India or so, we have to be very ingenious, because it's not easy to solve, let's say, economic conditions related to products. The price must be very low, and these products must be very durable, easy to prepare, because there is no high-level services available in countryside and so on. So sometimes I said it's easy to innovate iPhone as compared to $5 mobile phone to India. So and therefore we need a new kind of engineering, and in Singapore they call frugal engineering, meaning that you have to modularize product, use very simple product parts, and try to find what is already in market, not inventing them anew, and then combining very easy way products from these models. And such kind of frugal engineering is interesting. When I was last week IKEA for some family issues, and there was a big banderol in IKEA Vantaa, and there was a text: "We design first the price and then the product." And that was very interesting phrase. So we need, let's say, something equipment for home, beds or so on, and the price must be $10. Then how to build a very good bed with price, $10 price. So this is very simple way to say that sometimes design for product is not first thing what is need and what are conditions for people to consume that, and then try to find product. So price first, need and conditions and price, and then design the product. So this is something related to frugal engineering, and then we can learn a lot about how these kind of issues are solved. What is drivers of sustainable innovation? Cultural change, social expectation. The new normal means that people are now very aware of climate change and scarcity of natural resources. So there is a huge growth of awareness of social values and environmental issues. People like to be more active. That's one driver here. And we need a more service economy and design thinking there. In India, groups showed a picture that service is about 50%. And now it's growing, everywhere it's growing about towards 70. So it's a huge change in economy. And what is modern service economy, and how to guarantee equal opportunities for consumers and so on. Okay. At this last slide, I checked the trade with developing countries. Of course, China is the biggest part. And there you see export and import. It's about approaching 10 10 billion. It's not so much. And I think that we have to look behind these figures and start to think about collaboration with developing countries, especially collaboration with India and China, in innovation, in frugal engineering, in reverse innovation, in co-creation of new solutions. And I think that's better way for Finnish companies also. Not just go and sell, but try to find partners and try to collaborate solutions for local markets. And they are useful here also. That's my message, that if you think about this huge possibility of market, business market in Asia, we have to make our own strategic decisions how to collaborate. Okay. But we have still some time for discussion, comments for also for groups, and yeah, please.
Very nice talk, thank you. I have one question on this two slides back on the frugal engineering.
Yeah.
Do they have any courses in Singapore?
Yeah, I think, Kaiser, you remember that they have courses in engineering department, and was a Professor Wang, if I remember right, who was I have references, and he described what they are teaching: design thinking, frugal engineering, reverse innovation, and very much collaboration with India. They like to be a gateway to India, but I think why not go to Singapore and then to India, because it's easier to collaborate directly with India institution and so on. But frugal engineering seems to be in the curriculum.
It's very interesting because I made this couple of slides on Jugar and reverse innovation. I have shown that. It was just I made it on my own. I thought that it would be useful when I talked to you.
Yeah.
So it's just a coincidence that we are talking on this, and I was thinking uh-huh. about that. Uh-huh. We yeah. talked to each other yeah. regarding this presentation.
Yeah.
So I think is I see that the liberal thought process that is prevalent in Finland and yeah. other Scandinavian countries, and the bootstrapping mentality that's prevalent in India yeah. can be a good match for product
okay.
development.
Okay.
Because the traditional US or British engineers or French, they're very good in hijack. Like you said, it's easier to make an iPhone 5 than...
Yeah, if you have $5,000
or like, you know, like $500,
yeah.
For
yeah.
example, there's a tablet they have made in India called Akash, yeah. Akash Mirsky, which cost $50. And after it launched last year, there were like 3 or 4 more companies who yeah. made similar, like $50-$60 tablets. It's amazing. I mean, yeah. How are they selling it? How are they making money off it? I mean, I don't have one.
Yeah.
It works. I mean, I met the CEO last year.
And this they are, of course.
It does work. So this is a whole new yeah. way to do things. I think you need a lot of technology, and Finland is good for that, and you need a lot of liberal thinking.
Yeah.
Because to make products through reverse engineering needs a paradigm shift.
Yeah, and, yeah very good. But if you think about this frugal engineering, so I might be that we are not so familiar with local conditions in developing countries. Therefore, perhaps we try to produce something to these competitive markets where prices are going down and down, so it's not good business. So we have to understand better new challenges. And it's not possible without some kind of diaspora model, that you have to go there and see there and start to think new challenges. Seppo.
My background is in information and communication technology. For the past couple of years, I've been emerging acquisitions in that sector. And I have some experience in working with Chinese and Indian companies. And I'd say that for Finnish high-tech companies, especially in the information and communication technology, the absolute best way to start operation in India would be a joint venture company, because
you need local feet on the ground, people who understand the local culture, the local legislation, and people. You need local sales guys who speak the local lingo, and who understand the needs of the local people. In order to be able to do frugal engineering, you need to understand the special needs of the people in that country. And you cannot judge that in the right way from Finland.
Yeah.
It just doesn't happen. You need local feet on local ground. Yeah, so a joint venture is what I would suggest.
I would add to that, actually, that's an excellent point. When we met in March, me and I had said that it is rather important that when you get into India, you don't start in an expensive place like Delhi or Bangalore, because those are very expensive places. So I told Auntie that Agora Center and IIT can form a kind of association where... MOU, where the companies can be incubated in our science park. IIT is a world-class environment. It's like a Western campus. So there is no, you can still have a very good lifestyle, and you are 2 hours from the city, and you can do your product development, use very high-end students of ours, and then when you are ready, you get out. You go to Delhi or Bangalore or wherever it takes you. So that can be a model to accelerate the entry of Finnish companies into certain ICT sectors.
And so somehow the threshold to go to foreign country, especially to developing country, is too high without such kind of agreement or connection which can accelerate to be familiar with local conditions. And Seppo, I like to continue. So it's a kind of paradox that in global world, local knowledge and local conditions are still the core of business. Of course, we have some global, like Coca-Cola, some global brands, but more and more products are somehow customized. And it's impossible to customize without knowing local conditions. Therefore, to be global company means that you have to be present somehow to understand local conditions. And sometimes also local conditions is unique or something which can be based on your business. I mean that this senior economy in Finland did propose this aging population is not only problem, it's a huge new knowledge base for developing solutions for old people, and all countries are following somehow this way. So we can turn bad conditions to strengths by analyzing that what kind of business possibilities and solutions we can produce, exactly because we have so many senior people here, and we are active in healthcare now in US region also to find solutions for helping people to leave home long time. Please, we have still time for some issues. Mankey business boy, what is your...
Let's see. My name is Bill. Excellent for the talks, both of you. Maybe I can share my challenge. I'll be going to China and India in end of November, so this is very interesting to get some insights before I'm going there to actually see the places. And my quest is to build different kind of bootstrapping design school that would go around in a container. And I think that's I see that could be a very interesting market to bring it to China and India. And I don't know. I guess the question, or like maybe if this is the brief, what would you advise? I think it can be too. I think this advice, you could start a joint venture with the locals, is very, very valuable already.
It's a design kiosk.
Yeah,
mobile design kiosk.
Yeah, design.
Very interesting. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. You can always, we'll welcome you to get incubated in our place. We are not an incubator per se. Don't be scared of the word incubator. There's a scary word in Finland, but we can actually get you a campus environment, at the same time very business friendly, and you can develop your thing very quickly and then probably start selling it. IIT Kharagpur is like MIT of India. It's a very high brand. Mm-hmm. So you'll have high brand identity. And mm-hmm. you will use that to sell to other Indian businesses, even in China. So that also helps you. And also our student can get to learn what you take. And you can hire someone. So, you know, it's kind of a win-win. It's a very good effort. I mean, I'm not a design person myself. We have a design school also. We have a quality engineering school, QED, something.
As a last comment, Droop said that you are moving from Android to Microsoft phone system or Microsoft operating system. That's a good news for us. So perhaps Nokia made a good choice. I don't know, but we have been very pessimistic about that choice. But I know that Microsoft developing tools are very good, and there are a lot of people familiar with that kind of tools, so they are very effective. That's one advance or advantage of Microsoft products.
We find that diagnostic tools like ECG or blood pressure meter, they only integrated with Android. We have to write a lot of apps, and that creates problems because you save you cost big money.
Yeah.
The Windows-based ECG and all this are pretty much ready to use. And also the tablets made an entry into the Windows. Windows made into tablets, and the Windows 8 is a touchscreen-based OS. And Intel has given up and they're competing with ARM to create processors for tablets, changing their Atom processors. Mm. So as a telecom person, I'm very much excited to see the convergence. And I feel that at this moment, Windows definitely is one way to accelerate my dual engineering.
Okay.
And Android remains too interesting to us, but at this point, I want to deploy fast. Like you said, I don't want to reinvent the wheel. I don't want to find new ways of measuring blood pressure or ECG.
Mm.
I want to choose the lowest cost, highest quality equipment that Windows can integrate.
Yeah.
So that is the design.
It's a very practical issue.
Yeah.
Very practical issue. Yeah. And
I find problems because I hire like students
who
I thought are having good grades, but they cannot do the integration.
Yeah.
So I asked you how Singaporean teaching, because Singapore is like a Disneyland, everything is like made up. So I'm very skeptical.
Yeah.
It's not real, it's unreal world visual. It's so good to be true.
Now this seems to be a very interesting issue. We have two persons. Please.
Because I'm in a different, comment in a different.
Okay, Persepo.
This is a direct comment.
Yeah.
It's interesting, you mentioned it twice already once during your presentation. You mentioned like mobile health or connected health. The world population, as we know, is still growing. It will probably stop at 10 billion or so. Life expectancy is also growing, and healthcare costs are growing.
Right.
And that brings us to a very interesting point of connected health.
Right.
Using mobile phones, various types of connected devices to diagnosing people, care for elderly people, stuff like that. If I were a millionaire, I would probably like to put my money in something like that. And not in Finland, but in India.
Yeah, that's a good point. We also believe here in Agora that good solutions to such kind of wiki problems are very good business possibilities because they are quite general problems and meet everywhere. Okay, so but I think that Agora and this university might be very active, and we are doing something to finding solutions and mobile phone solutions to help people in their everyday life. And I think we have. But we are not so much thinking business. Seppo, perhaps you know that now we are calling a researcher to present a business ideas there are some related to healthcare.
Yeah. Actually, the last call was to last Friday, and there were all of those business propositions for decades funding had to be scalable. So that's the one idea that for the money, to get the money, is it has to be scalable. And one of the ideas that went now for the decades was for the healthcare, and some others were too scalable for example, in India. But it's,
when is this called? In?
Sorry,
this call coming?
In about 3 months or so, and then they're starting project.
So 3 months you have to submit.
So it's a huge funding tool, and we are developing capabilities for helping research teams if they like to commercialize their ideas, make a better products and check in markets and so on. So perhaps this is one issue where we can share experience with India Institute of Technology in Kharagpur. Then another question, please.
Yeah. I teach global information systems here at the Department of Computer Science. One question I have in a different direction. We've heard a lot of things about great opportunities and a lot of potentials. However, I would like to ask to both speakers, what do you see, are our students actually prepared well to enter these kind of collaborations, to really work across borders? I can see in the department, in our department so far, we have not really done that. And in general, in the information systems domain, our students are unprepared, with a few exceptions very close to them. So please don't blame me. So what do you see as like the key competences for students who come onto the market to leave the university, besides, of course, innovation potentials?
Yeah, from both sides. In fact, yeah. For me, everything is student-driven. I do nothing without students. I have 50 undergraduate students who are taking one more extra year after the undergraduate to complete the company creation process. So it's a very unique program. It's a dual degree program. It's a master's in entrepreneurship and bachelor's in engineering. The students from the second year onwards take one extra course in startup management, like finance, integrated finance, integrated marketing, integrated human resource, that kind of courses. One course per semester only, so they don't get loaded up. And they finish the undergraduate in 4 years. The final year, they do the company creation. They actually sell the product, no company creation, no degree. It's the first time university has linked giving degree to a product, I mean to a product creation. So this is what we have done. So everything what I'm talking, I have also learned in the mind, nothing else. I believe localization of solutions needs pairing up of students and the local entrepreneur. But sometimes knowledge is limited, so you need global collaboration, like you were saying.
Yeah.
So you need to have more collaboration to solve more important local problems, not less.
Yeah.
Because the solutions are not there locally.
It's very good point. We have just finished the book about future of science and future university system, and we propose that a new element, important element for universities will be the ability to solve wiki problems. And we have to organize science so that they collaborate in solving, and students must be involved to this solving approaches. So if let's say your student in information system, they participate to program or university to solving communication problem in developing countries based on mobile phones. So we have involved students to work in these kind of projects together with foreign partners and also must be so that there is a research project supporting that the same issue. So we can organize the whole work in university starting from wiki problems. Of course, understanding that there must be of course, some basic research based on traditional disciplines, but still solutions are no more traditional disciplinary solutions. They are multidisciplinary, cross or interdisciplinary solutions. So we need collaboration inside science. And why not take students there? And somehow, if hub is no university, and so why not collaborate so that our students are twin students from Kahadbur and Jyväskylä at the same time? I don't know. Mari?
Yeah, actually, we have tested this kind of, we have had like a pilot courses or the project courses where we have had like our students, like business school students and also students from IT faculty and other like multidisciplinary groups of students. And then they were doing some work together with Professor Bisma's students. Of course, we notice it's quite difficult, all these paper scribing and all that, and this whole how to communicate, and it's not easy. Just basic things like in Finland, the students and even the faculty, we are not working on weekends, and then some Indian students say to us, "Why you are not replying on your Skype calls on Saturday evening?" And I said, "No, I'm not working on Saturday evening." So just like small things, which you then learn in there.
Some students.
Yeah, so it's like more, she was trying to read change order. Oh. And even change said, "No, I'm not working on Saturday." So we have done like piloting of these kind of activities, but it's quite demanding for the teachers, but it's also keeps a lot. And all feedback from the students has been really great. But yeah, it requires that. Yeah.
If you know a student $50,000 to appear into the process, if they can qualify for salary, that's a loan. Yeah. Seed loan is like 2% interest. India invests in 15% for such promotion. So it's 1/2 the market rate. And it has moratorium of 2 years. No interest payment for 1 year. So you have flexibility, and if you are successful, you can convert it into equity. Those things exist. What I see, there is no doubt of students. There is doubt of people like me, Marie, Auntie, that kind of thing. Professors don't find this glamorous enough.
It's too much work.
And too much work.
If you compare it, you just go into a classroom and you teach and then you go away. So you don't have to worry about all the hassle which is there.
Marie has been there to teach a class in March, and she has met all the senior professors. None of them have been motivated to do this. They're teaching well. But when I say, why don't you take care of this evening program or do this awareness thing, they always find an excuse. I mean, university, like university and IIT, we are very high academic freedom. You cannot push something. I mean, if you don't do it, you don't do it. That's a voluntary thing. You have to teach and you have to research. Beyond that, you cannot push anything. So I do not. I hire new professors now. So hopefully they will listen to me. It's not easy. They don't find it glamorous enough. One way is to use this to the appraisal process. You know what's the appraisal process? Like if you have papers, if you have grants, then they give you salary raise. Maybe this should be part of the appraisal process, which might help. Or this can be put into a publication maybe. Maybe if you can help create three companies that like three peer-reviewed journal papers. Something like that, something should be created so that young professors who needs a promotion in India, like here, promotion is based on publications, unfortunately. And young guys are your best bet, but they only tend to get a promotion. So for them, spending this time to publish a paper is far more less riskier than trying to listen to Dhruvit Biswas and do something funny. So I could not motivate them. Yeah, I don't blame them. They have a career ahead of them. Yeah. So why push it? But we need to find a solution. Maybe a platform which is formal, where Vasula and IIT can help. If they see that they can come over here and do some other research, they might be able to see it as an incentive. Or you might form a company there, they might form an incentive. Some incentive.
Okay, I think that now it's time to close this Agora Open Forum, and thank you for Professor Visvas and Professor an audience, and also a network audience. Perhaps your students in Karakur have followed that. And remember, UCard, clever resourcefulness. Now we are clever, indeed, in this sense also. Thank you.
Thank you.